Five Things First Thing with JR Morning's Chris Renwick, Lloyd Jackson, and Jamie Edmonds.
Long Saturday.
And a longer Sunday.
Yeah. Where do we want to start? Do we want to start with the Tigers?
Sure. I mean, by now everyone knows all the inner workings of what happened on Friday night. But I mean, they gave it their all out of the playoffs, and now Seattle is one game up on Toronto. So things are moving at a rapid pace.
Yeah. I mean, you know, 15 innings. I mean, they just didn't go quietly. You know,
and those early extra innings were unbelievable.
Yeah.
The drama. I mean, both teams got themselves in a position to score, and the defense, the pitching prevailed.
Yes.
It was really unbelievable. So, one of the more unbelievably great games to watch as a baseball fan.
Right.
Now, if you were in the Detroit or Seattle markets, it was agonizing.
Yeah.
It was death by a thousand cuts. And the Tigers end up losing that game in 15 innings. But they just never were able to get over the issues that plagued them the last month and a half of the year.
Yeah.
They couldn't hit the ball, and they couldn't get timely hitting. And
they left people stranded.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was a bit of a bummer, but an interesting game nonetheless. So that's it for them for the year, and now the attention
same
turns
spot,
to
same deciding ALDS game.
Yep. Yeah.
And so now what does Scott Harris do?
Yeah, that's exactly it. It's you need some bats. You need some guys that can hit the ball. So that needs to be the focus this offseason. And then what happens to Tarek Skubal?
Yeah, I mean,
you know,
he
that's
struck
a
out
major,
13. He did his job twice in this series.
Yes.
Yeah. Jason, real quick, do you expect Skubal to be on this roster, thumbs up or thumbs down next year?
I think they're watching.
Oh, they're watching. All right. Well, we'll get to that.
The president.
All right. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, Lions lose last night. And again,
it started off, man. I was like,
wild game. I know they go on this long, clock eating drive to start the game. They had a touchdown called back, which was a great play design.
I thought it was too. But I mean, I guess when you talk about the rules and you see what happened and everything, okay, but. I don't know. That was a great play. I just wish it would have been,
I have the pool.
Ballot.
I have the pool report from what happened here. They ask what happened here with this penalty for Jared Goff to draw it that negated the touchdown. And the referee says there were a lot of moving parts. We had a quarterback go up to the line of scrimmage. He paused in the quarterback position, didn't get under center, but he walked up and stopped like he was the quarterback. Then he went in motion and he threw the ball. They threw him the ball for a touchdown. If the quarterback assumes the quarterback position, then goes in motion, he has to stop for a second before they snap the ball because he gets out of the view of the officials. It was determined after the lengthy discussion that he stopped at the QB position, then went in motion. I guess he didn't stop long enough.
Yeah. So he was behind the center and then went into motion,
out
but,
wide.
Didn't stop for a second. And you know what I mean? He just kind of went into motion and then ran.
Yeah, the thing that made me the most mad about it was the length between the touchdown and the touchdown call and then the flag thrown.
Yeah.
That was the
minute
to
14.
Me, that was the worst part of that.
Right.
Is because if that was a penalty, you should have called it. Called it.
Yeah.
I mean, they were setting up for the extra point.
They said it wasn't reviewable, and so but they had a conference there. The official
Correct.
Had a conference.
So they didn't actually review it.
Right.
But they got together and said that it was a penalty.
And then threw the flag a minute later.
And then at the end of the game, this happens.
End of the game there. Branch walking by. Mahomes extends the hand to him. Branch doesn't respond, doesn't put his hand out. Pat on the back. Juju Smith-Schuster saw that. And then Branch and Juju continue to pass by, and he gives Juju a shot, who goes down. And that's where the whole thing began. It was Pacheco, Branch, Juju, and other players involved, including Trent McDuffie.
So are we looking at some suspensions?
So at the end of the game, Brian Branch gave Juju Smith-Schuster, wide receiver for Kansas City, a shot to the face. Kind of put his hands up in his face. Mac rocked his head back.
Okay.
And then it started a whole kerfuffle at the end of the game. Dan Campbell wasn't happy post-game
either.
I
know he wasn't.
Here's what he had to say.
I love Brian Branch, but what he did is inexcusable, and it's not going to be accepted here. It's not what we do. It's not what we're about. I apologize to Coach Reed and the Chiefs and
you know, and Schuster. That's not okay. We that's not what we do here, and it's not going to be okay. He knows it. Our team knows it, and so that's not what we do.
That's my man. That is my man right there, because that's just not how we get down.
Right.
That's not how we get down, and I'm glad he said that. That's not what we do.
And he apologized, and he said, yeah, that's not okay.
That's
now, Branch
man.
Has come out and said, well, it's because I got blocked illegally all game and right in front of the refs and blah, blah, blah. But, like,
well,
you don't
take it up with them.
You don't take it into your own hands there at the end.
No, because now you're talking about fines. You're talking about penalties or suspensions.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, certainly.
Yeah, you hurt your team.
So the league's going to look at it. And he's an important piece on this team.
Yes.
On that defense. So that was unfortunate to see. But the Lions lose a really important game against another really good offense. Right now, the best offenses that they've faced this year, you know, they've lost.
Yeah.
And well, so is it concerning? Maybe. I mean, again, they've got two of their starting corners out for considerable time at the cornerback spot.
Well,
so it those injuries do matter at the end of the day.
Next week, you know, it's Tampa Bay.
Right. Baker, now they're really good offensive
Baker
team.
The playmaker.
Yeah. No, and he had an unbelievable Sunday too.
Yes.
We don't need to break down Tampa Bay, but he had a good Sunday too.
Yeah.
Me and Michigan State both lose on
right.
Saturday. So
tough weekend.
Tough weekend. Meanwhile, some good news though. However, Donald Trump is in Jerusalem to address the Israeli parliament. This comes after this morning. Reports say that all of the living hostages have been released. Now, I've seen different numbers on the living hostages.
I saw 20.
I've seen 13. I've seen 20. Fox is reporting 20. We're going to go with 20.
20.
All of the living hostages have been released. And that is great, great news, because that means that the parameters of this agreement that were agreed to, that were signed to, are being adhered to.
Yes.
At this point.
And then after he speaks to the parliament, he flies to Egypt, where he's going to have this huge summit there with all of these European leaders, Canada and they're coming to, you know, kind of put a seal on this ceasefire. And you know, the president said on his way over in the plane, on his way over, somebody asked him, is the war over? He said, yes, as far as he's concerned, it's done. Now, some of the folks over in the Arab countries say, okay, you know, we think it's over, but we're not sure yet, you know. But the president says it's over as far as he's concerned.
Well, as part of this deal, buses carrying Palestinian prisoners left Israeli prisons. So we're getting the hostages out of Gaza. Israeli people are letting out the Palestinian prisoners. So this ceasefire is holding. The address to the Knesset was like an hour and a half delayed, wondering if there's something going on behind the scenes between Trump and Benjamin Netanyahu when it comes to that afternoon summit.
Yes.
Is there buttons being pushed behind the scenes? Who knows? We know that the Palestinian Authority has been invited to this summit.
Mm-hmm.
And if Netanyahu goes too, then two major players are there this afternoon.
That's
and it
huge.
Seems like this is moving forward.
That's huge.
Yeah. And we were talking pre-show, you know, this confab in Egypt.
Mm-hmm.
There was some questions on whether or not Benjamin Netanyahu would attend.
Yeah.
And it sounds like he is. He's going to be there.
I feel like that's what they were talking about before
I'm
this
sure.
address.
Yeah.
I think so, too.
Yeah. No, I think the president.
Because
you know,
I think all indications at first were is that Benjamin Netanyahu was not going to be
That's
there.
Right. He didn't, he wasn't invited. Him or anybody from Hamas.
Right. So the fact that Bibi's going to be there is, again, I think it speaks to the strength of this deal this point.
And it was an invitation to Iran as well. They haven't said whether they were going to be there or not.
Right.
But, I mean, if they come, that would be really historic.
So CNN reports that both leaders, Donald Trump and Netanyahu, will join the summit to reinforce the Gaza ceasefire agreement and affirm their commitment to this peace deal. So something to watch.
That's big.
And we'll get audio for you as soon as we can, as Donald Trump is set to address the parliament.
Five things first thing with JR Morning on 760 WJR.
Mike Lee is the managing editor for Crane's Detroit Business. Mike, good morning. What's on tap this morning?
Good morning, Lloyd. The big deal this week is the deal between Fifth Third Bank to acquire Comerica Bank. We took a look at what some of the likely after effects of that deal are. It's the first big bank deal we've had in a little while locally. It would combine the two banks combined would be a real close competitor to JP Morgan Chase for the biggest bank in Michigan. One thing that's very likely to happen, regulators, as they scrutinize this deal for approval, will probably be looking at making the combined bank sell off some branches. However, that's not guaranteed. This is sort of a test case. One of the reasons why bank mergers are heating up again is the Trump administration is perceived to be more lenient on them, in terms of competitive concerns. So that may or may not happen. If it doesn't, I think it will spur a whole lot more bank combinations. Obviously, we've seen a lot of bank mergers in the early in the 2010s. There were just a continual wave of them. It's been a little bit of a slower merger market lately. Comerica has a giant office in Farmington Hills, over 300,000 square feet that it just moved into about a year ago. Fifth Third says it's committed to keeping that office, but the banks have a lot of other real estate around town. And I would be remiss if I didn't mention a certain ballpark in downtown Detroit. Comerica's CEO has said that the name of it won't change next year, but most likely will following that. What that name will be, we don't know yet. There's already a Fifth Third Field in Toledo. So it will be interesting to see what happens there. Comerica is really a hometown bank for Detroit, even though it moved its headquarters to Dallas 20 years ago. Goes back almost 175 years when the Detroit Savings Fund Institute was founded by a man named Elon Farnsworth in 1849. And I thought this was a fun fact. The bank took $41 in deposits on the first day of business.
Wow. $41. Cool. We've come a long way since then, Mike. Also, you've got the marijuana industry taking aim at this tax that was approved by the legislature.
Yeah, the legislature put a 24% wholesale tax on cannabis as part of the budget deal two weeks ago. And as soon as Governor Gretchen Whitmer signed that bill, the industry sued the state to challenge the law. Their argument is that the tax violates Michigan's constitution, which requires any law approved by voters on a ballot issue changing it requires 3/4 vote, which this bill did not have. So the industry is seeking to block the tax from taking effect. It's due to take effect January 1st. The weed businesses say it'll push the legal market for cannabis, which is struggling over the edge, struggling with low prices that have dropped by 65% since 2023. This tax would make our total weed tax second highest in the nation at about 40%. Only California is higher, and California even dialed back their taxes a little while ago because it was helping fuel the black market.
What about movies being made here?
Yeah, it's been a decade now since the state of Michigan got rid of some very generous tax incentives for movie making. During that period, we saw the filming of movies like Transformers and Superman versus Batman in Detroit. And at that time, a whole lot of money was also plowed into movie studio development, the projects in Allen Park, Pontiac, and many places around town. Some of them never got done. But we took a look back at what happened to those developments. What are those movie studios or the land where they failed to materialize? And it turns out they bounced back pretty nicely. The most notorious failure was a plan called Unity Studios in Allen Park. The city itself issued $31 million in bonds for a film school and a studio. The project never materialized, and it nearly bankrupted Allen Park. However, the city sold the property for $12 million. Today, it houses Roush Enterprises, some Ford facilities, hotels. One of the biggest developments that did get finished was in Pontiac, the Michigan Motion Picture Studios. The two movies I mentioned earlier, Transformers and the Superman movie, were produced there. It closed after the tax breaks were eliminated by lawmakers, and it was later sold for $44 million and now houses the defense contractor aerospace company Williams International, which is a big employer in Pontiac. You know, whether Michigan should bring the tax breaks back is a perennial debate, something that gets proposed pretty much annually in Lansing and doesn't seem to go anywhere. but I don't think we'll ever see the generous tax breaks we saw in the 2000s and 2010 to turn us into a movie making powerhouse.
Well, we'll read about these and other stories in Crane's Detroit Business. Mike Lee, managing editor, thank you so much.
Thank you.
I got to tell you though, you know, there has been a steady drumbeat from directors, producers, actors even. It has become so expensive to make a movie in Hollywood or California at large that you could travel around the world with an entire crew of people and shoot it for less than what they can do in California because of the tax bracket that they've got set up there. It has become so expensive. And so what have we seen from other states? Well, look at what Georgia has done, for example.
Right.
Look at what some of these other
Tyler
states
Perry
have done.
Tyler Perry has his whole big studio. He does nothing in California. He does all of his movies right there.
I mean, New York, all of these places have become the Hollywood, essentially.
Yeah.
Because Hollywood's too expensive. So I think Michigan's got to get a slice of that pie. I think they have to.
Well, the argument against has always been like the tax incentives don't bring in the money that they say they do.
Yeah, I think that's true in the immediate. But once you get a couple things here that people like, see, then they want to go. Like The Walking Dead, for example. I mean, obviously that was a successful show.
Sure.
But it was shot in Georgia. And then now it's like a tourist spot.
Mm-hmm.
Like people want to come and see. And it's become like a perpetual generator of revenue for some of these communities. So I've always been in favor of it to a certain degree.
Let's talk about what's going on over in Jerusalem with the peace deal. We have some hostages that have been released, 20 of them that are alive that are released. We'll talk more with Jonathan Savage at 6:35 here on JR Morning.
Meanwhile, the big news this morning, Donald Trump in Jerusalem to address the Israeli parliament on this historic peace deal that seems to be going in the right direction. All of the living hostages have been released. More are set to be released on the other side, Israel, to Gaza. Let's bring in Jonathan Savage, our Fox correspondent and WJR contributor. Jonathan, good morning to you. Donald Trump getting set to address the Israeli parliament. Where are we at now, and what do we expect him to say?
Yeah, I'm just watching pictures coming in from the Knesset now. President Trump is there right now. Benjamin Netanyahu, the Israeli prime minister, is speaking. How long we've waited for this moment, says Benjamin Netanyahu. He says it's a day that will be inscribed in history, saying that President Trump will be inscribed in the history of our nation. President Trump is about to speak in a few minutes' time, and we've been given some excerpts of what he's going to say. So I can tell you that he will say that America will join Israel in two everlasting vows, never forget and never again. He'll also, interestingly, tell the Knesset that Israel has won all that can be won by force of arms, saying now is the time to translate the victories into peace and prosperity. Mm. And finally, another fascinating line that is scheduled to come out of President Trump's mouth in the next few minutes, to say that even to Iran, whose regime has inflicted so much death on the Middle East, the hand of friendship and cooperation is always open.
Jonathan, on the Palestinian side, I know hundreds of prisoners are being released. What's the atmosphere in Gaza, in the West Bank right now? I mean, is it relief? Is anger? Something in between?
Joy. Absolutely joy in places like the West Bank just now. Seeing pictures from Ramallah, where two Red Cross buses have arrived containing Palestinian prisoners. Many of them who were freed were serving life sentences. So it could be that they would never expect to be released, or at least not for a very long time. So you can imagine the joy there. Interestingly, a lot of them, they don't look particularly well, quite gaunt. Some appear to have injuries. There's a lot of worry there, too, about what the condition their relatives will come back in.
So there's been this exchange of hostages and prisoners, and now the question is, now what? What's the future look like in the region? And there's going to be the summit in Egypt, but Benjamin Netanyahu, in a statement about 20 minutes ago, said he will not go to it.
Mm. Yeah, we thought he was going to go. He was invited to go, but he won't now be joining President Trump there. We're told that this is because of a Jewish holiday that's happening, so he's not going to be able to make it because of time constraints. President Donald Trump will be there along with the leaders or representatives of about 20 other countries and looking at what comes next about the disarmament of Hamas. President Trump says Hamas will disarm. Also about the governance of Gaza, who will be in charge, how it will be overseen by this international board of peace that President Trump talked about, and rebuilding Gaza for the Palestinians, ensuring that it can become a place where people can live safely.
Let's zoom out a little bit, because we've got this peace summit that's scheduled to take place in Egypt. Donald Trump, obviously, in Jerusalem, getting set to talk this morning. But he's also talked about this peace plan that other countries have signed off on it, that other countries around the region have signed off on it. What's their temperature like this morning?
Yeah, this plan has international support, and this can be seen in the fact that number 15 on this plan is the United States working with other countries, including Arab countries, to build up an international force to ensure the ceasefire, to ensure Israel's security. And, you know, that will include countries like Turkey, who have offered to send troops, although they don't have a great relationship with Israel, so Israel may reject that. But clearly, there are plenty of countries around the region who want this deal to be successful. They want peace and prosperity. Of course, they're also going to push for that goal of the Palestinian people, an independent state separate from Israel.
Speaking with Jonathan Savage, Fox News radio correspondent, WJR contributor, and Jonathan, you know, Gaza is described as a wasteland. I mean, about 90% of the people are displaced. So what's next? I mean, even if the ceasefire holds, what kind of international coordination is going to be needed for any type of real recovery?
Yeah, the people of Gaza are fed up of war. They're fed up of death. They're fed up of living in tents, and they would like to see the rebuild as soon as possible. But this is going to take time. Initially, the territory is to be administered by a committee of Palestinians. You know, the Palestinians are among the most highly educated people in the Middle East, so or certainly in the Arab world, certainly that's considered to be fairly straightforward in getting together enough people with that, with the expertise to do that. Over the top of that, though, President Trump says that his peace board with an international flavor, the likes of Prime Minister Tony Blair will be part of that, will oversee what is going on and ensure that Hamas does not play a role and to make sure that the committee is able to do their job as they are meant to. Longer term, still not exactly clear what's going to happen, and I'm sure there'll be many, many summits and many, many discussions between the US, Egypt, Israel, and other countries to try and figure out exactly what Gaza should be in future and who should govern it.
President or Benjamin Netanyahu talked about the Abraham Accords and crediting the president for that in the past. Do you think those move forward and more countries recognize Israel with the president sort of pushing buttons?
Well, Saudi Arabia, the grand prize of the Abraham Accords, always said that they could not continue with it so long as Israel was conducting the war in Gaza. So this hopefully will draw a line under that war and allow the normalization of relations between Israel and other countries to continue, because it is widely seen that the pathway to peace is often through people's wallets and purses, because where the countries are stable, where they are prosperous, where they're able to do business with each other, there's a very strong motivating factor to keep things peaceful.
And, you know, this is a pretty comprehensive peace plan. They seem to be encouraged by the fact that this is more of a long-lasting deal and not more of a fly-by-night type of ceasefire deal. Is that still the read that you get from it?
Well, President Trump still, I think he feels the hand of history on his shoulder at this point. And I think that he would very much love to see this being the start of something long term. He is going to say today in his speech that this is an opportunity to set up a whole new system in the Middle East, to set up a whole new era of peace and prosperity in the Middle East. So he is looking beyond ending the war. He's looking beyond the rebuild of Gaza to a region which is transformed, in his words today.
Well, obviously, a great day for Israel, a great day for those who still had people in captivity. And a great day for those in Gaza that are getting relief, that are going to see aid flow in at a much faster rate. And for those that have been upset about the government system in Gaza, mm-hmm. certainly some good news on that side of things as well. Jonathan Savitz, always appreciate it. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Yeah, well, I'd love to get your thoughts on what we're seeing in the Middle East as Donald Trump is getting set to address the parliament in Jerusalem. 800-859-0957, 800-859-0WJR. Meanwhile, coming up, we've got an opportunity to hear from you. And boy, oh boy, tough sports weekend here in Detroit. And he says, look, he's committed to this piece. Donald Trump is committed to this piece. And so they're going to get it done. It was a powerful statement by Benjamin Netanyahu.
Yeah, and Benjamin Netanyahu is certainly praising the president in mm-hmm. these remarks. There's a lot of praise going toward the president. I believe he believes it. Yeah, that this really has been brokered by President Trump and that we're at this point because of President Trump.
Yeah, and I agree. And, I mean, you just got to give the president credit. I mean, this has not been done. No other president has been able to do this. And he's going to convene the summit in Egypt with all of these, you know, leaders from all around the world to really help really try to solidify the ceasefire. And, I mean, this is historic.
You know, for me, like on all of this stuff, I'm very simple when it comes to how government works and the political, geopolitical decisions that are made. You do good things, I'm happy. You do bad things, I'm not.
Yeah.
That's my take on things. Sure. And this is a good thing.
It is.
It's a good thing. And so just because it's Donald Trump or just because it's somebody that you may not particularly care for doesn't mean that this isn't a good thing. And so I think that it's a good thing right now, right? How this transpires, we'll see, yeah. Right? You just don't know how any of this. All right, 7:05, Donald Trump soon will address the Israeli parliament in Jerusalem as the effects of this peace deal really have taken effect.
I can't believe he still hasn't spoken. It was supposed to be like 2 hours ago. Like they started coverage at 4 a.m. for this.
Right.
And it's just taking a long time.
Well, then he gave us the okey-doke. He walked up to the podium.
Yeah, like he was going to speak.
Here we go. And then he's like, ah, come on up, this other guy. So now we're just waiting. And as soon as Donald Trump comes up, we'll give you a
But he looks tired, though, too. He looks tired.
Because he's
been flying all night. I mean, you know, all of this.
He does look very tired. Yeah. But the man has been
working hard.
I give it to him.
Yeah. Yeah. So we'll watch that. But the remaining living hostages have been released.
Yes.
And you're talking about another prisoner swap where you're going to see a little over 1,700 people in Israeli custody that will be released mm-hmm. inside Gaza. So, you know, this is the cost of these deals, right? That you're going to release hostages that you have, people that you have, prisoners that you have. And this is part of that. We saw it on, you know, Russia, like Paul Whelan, you know, was in Russian custody for years and years and years. And, you know, you had to give up people in a prisoner trade, essentially. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So it's the same situation here. But the good news is the very early effects of this peace deal are taking shape. Meanwhile, it's a tough sports weekend for us. Tigers losing 15 innings on Friday night. Absolutely brutal. And then last night, I mean, just a wild ending to that Chiefs-Lions game. You know, they didn't play particularly well, but and then you had the scuffle at the end. It was weird.
Just, you don't want to really want to look at the sports pages this morning.
No, it's not great.
Tough loss in Kansas City. Lions just couldn't get the job done. I mean, Patrick Mahomes is Patrick Mahomes, just like they had said all week leading up to it. Like, their record, it doesn't really reflect like Patrick Holmes of Mahomes.
But you know
of
old, who you're dealing with.
He is who we thought he was.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And he can sort of read the defense and just either use his legs or not. And he's still very good.
Dan Campbell says he's disappointed with how things shook out last night.
Yeah, I'm disappointed. You know, I'm disappointed. Because, you know, it's been a long time since you're watching somebody kneel it three times in front of you, and it's not even close. You know, you're down two scores. I mean, we got work pretty good. So, it's disappointing. It's really disappointing.
And what looked to be like a really cool play where Jared Goff catches the football instead of throws it was negated. And everyone's like, what happened there? According to the pool report, he didn't pause long enough at the quarterback position.
It almost feels like one of those situations, like that's depending on what officials you have in a particular game.
That's right.
I think that some officials would let that go.
Mm-hmm.
Others wouldn't. Like it almost feels more like a judgment call.
It was, because it wasn't reviewable. They had a conference.
Right.
You know, right
And that
there.
Flag came how long after, Jamie?
1 minute, 14 seconds.
One minute, 14 seconds. All right, let's go to the podium. Donald Trump in Jerusalem.
Speaker, esteemed members of the Knesset and cherished citizens of Israel, we gather on a day of profound joy, of soaring hope, of renewed faith, and above all, a day to give our deepest thanks to the Almighty God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. After two harrowing years in darkness and captivity, 20 courageous hostages are returning to the glorious embrace of their families, and it is glorious. 28 more precious loved ones are coming home at last to rest in this sacred soil for all of time. And after so many years of unceasing war and endless danger, today the skies are calm, the guns are silent, the sirens are still, and the sun rises on a holy land that is finally at peace, a land and a region that will live, God willing, in peace for all eternity. This is not only the end of a war, this is the end of an age of terror and death, and the beginning of the age of faith and hope and of God. It's the start of a grand concord and lasting harmony for Israel and all the nations of what will soon be a truly magnificent region. I believe that so strongly. This is the historic dawn of a new Middle East. I want to express my gratitude to a man of exceptional courage and patriotism, whose partnership did so much to make this momentous day possible. You know who I'm talking about. There's only one, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Bibi, please stand up. And he is not easy, I want to tell you. He's not the easiest guy to deal with. But that's what makes him great. That's what makes him great. Thank you very much, baby. Great job. And let me also convey my tremendous appreciation for all of the nations of the Arab and Muslim world that came together to press Hamas to set the hostages free and to send them home. We had a lot of help. We had a lot of help from a lot of people that you wouldn't suspect. And I want to thank them very much for that. It's an incredible triumph for Israel and the world to have all of these nations working together as partners in peace. And it's pretty unusual for you to see that, but it happened in this case. This was a very unusual point in time, a brilliant point in time. Generations from now, this will be remembered as the moment that everything began to change and change very much for the better. Like the USA right now, it will be the golden age of Israel and the golden age of the Middle East. It's going to work together. I'd like to thank several great American patriots for their invaluable help in getting something done that almost everyone thought was absolutely impossible. We were wasting our time. So many people said, you're just wasting your time. But we weren't, because we had
so that's Donald Trump speaking to the Israeli parliament this morning. Some powerful things to say from the president there.
And we'll monitor what he's saying. I'm sure there'll be a lot of little nuggets because we've seen some excerpts come out.
Yes. Yeah. Meanwhile, 7:13 this morning, time for WJR's Business, be brought to you by Shelving.com. We rack your world. Here's Jeff Sloan, the founder and CEO of Startup Nation, to spotlight the entrepreneurial tech and startup community on WJR.
Good morning. In order to succeed in business today, you must adopt AI across your enterprise, right? I mean, if you don't, you face the potential of becoming irrelevant and perhaps even eliminated altogether. We've all heard that a time or two. Well, not so fast. The fact is, while AI certainly is an important enabling technology that must be considered in various ways to optimize your business today and certainly to compete, using it in selective ways that addresses a specific need is the way to appropriately adopt AI into your enterprise. And in fact, what we're witnessing in business today with the adoption of AI is what you'd expect. That is a maturation of the use in AI in business based on all of the learning that companies have amassed today. Forbes Research polled 1,075 C-suite executives at large global companies in August and September and uncovered new challenges that are less about figuring out the basics of AI and more about using it more strategically. Some of the key takeaways: just over half of executives indicated that they're using AI across the enterprise to try to figure out where it fits best, while the remainder are using it for specific initiatives, the survey found. And this may indicate that companies are figuring out what AI can do best for them and concentrating its use in those certain specific areas as opposed to that broader enterprise approach. Interestingly, 56% are reporting an ROI of under 5% for their AI initiatives to date, so those more impactful uses are still being figured out. And right now, AI is relied upon as a strategic partner for several companies. More than 4 out of 5 respondents said AI is delivering significant gains to enhance decision-making, operate more efficiently, and improve product or service quality. And no doubt, while all of these specific uses are being sorted out as companies transition from the novelty of implementing AI across the enterprise to making it work more effectively in specific use cases, there's no doubt still many bumps in the road. Matt Calkins, CEO of AI-powered automation and orchestration platform Appian, says this: there seems to be an AI bubble now, not referring to what's going on with AI company valuations, but because prices for the use of AI are high and the value to companies are still lacking in many cases. So lots of tightening up of the use of AI happening in the market, while at the same time, still lots of figuring out just exactly how to apply AI still going on. I'm Jeff Sloan, founder and CEO of StartupNation.com. And that's today's Business Beat on the great voice of the Great Lakes, WJR.
Welcome back to JR Morning. In his latest op-ed, the Detroit News editorial page editor Nolan Finley argues that America's political system is broken, not because of one party or the other, but because of both. He says the endless partisan gridlock has left voters disillusioned and progress stalled, suggesting it may be time to get rid of Republicans and Democrats altogether. And joining us now to talk about that and other stories is Detroit News editorial page editor Nolan Findlay. Nolan, good morning.
Good morning, Lloyd.
I got to ask you first, what your thoughts on this ceasefire deal and the hostages being released this morning?
Very encouraged by it. I thought, you know, it really was a brilliant package that President Trump put together in terms of first bringing on the Gulf states in support and cutting off really the support for Hamas, and then outlining a plan to not just stop the fighting and return things to the status quo, which is what we've always had in the past when these conflicts end, but to lay really a long-term plan for peace and prosperity in that region. If you know, we can keep Hamas down and out of the picture, I think there's a chance to change, you know, the world for those folks in that region.
Got to ask you now about your op-ed, man. It really pulls no punches. You write that Republican and Democratic parties are failing America and that their focus on partisan power could lead the nation into ruin. What kind of pushed you over the edge in saying enough is enough?
This ridiculous shutdown we're in, and when Chuck Schumer was asked about it last week. He said, longer it goes on, the better it is for us, us meaning Democrats and not the American people. So, you know, they even something like, as serious as the government not being able to operate and function shutting down and people not getting paid, family suffering, they're just gleeful because they think more miserable we are, the better it is for them. And Republicans just as bad on the other side. What they care about is getting and maintaining partisan power. It's all that matters. There's no other principle at work in Washington, D.C. You ask what's the difference between these two parties, and I'd say very, very little. They're all motivated by winning elections, and you know when they get in, they're motivated by keeping power. So none of them have any courage whatsoever. And you're seeing the results of it. And I don't see how these two parties can ever reform themselves enough, refocus themselves enough to solve the major problems that are ahead. And I wrote this in context of Mike Duggan's independent candidacy with the hopes that maybe this puts a big crack in this destructive duopoly we're living under.
Well, we've talked about this sort of independent, you know, push, the No Labels Party trying to do something, et cetera. But you think it's just in name only right now. It's not really in practice.
No, I think Duggan's independent candidacy is very much a real candidacy. You know, we're going to wait and see how independent he behaves on the campaign trail. But, you know, my hope is that others will see this and say, yeah, you know, maybe this is the way to go, that the American voter is so disgusted with the way things are in America today that they'll finally try something new, or maybe a lot of things new.
Nolan, I agree. I think these folks that get into these positions of power, their number one goal is to win elections, is to keep their jobs, is to keep the access going, is to keep the gravy train rolling. And you know, I think a prime example of that is, like, you know, this peace deal's been put into place. Where's Rashida Tlaib? Where are all these people right. that have been banging that drum of peace in the Middle East, of a ceasefire now? We haven't heard a peep from any of those people. And now wow. we're in this historic moment where, look, I don't know what it looks like down the road, but at the moment, you've got prisoner swaps, you've got hostage swaps. You actually have a little bit of stability in the region.
Well, it exposes their real motivation. Peace and ceasefire wasn't what they were after with all this protest and violence and disruption. They're after the destruction of Israel. And this deal leaves Israel intact. And so you're going to see the campuses still in uproar and folks like Rashida Tlaib still agitating.
Speaking with Nolan Findlay, editor of the Detroit News editorial page. And Nolan, back to your op-ed, you raised an interesting test for true independence, you know, like refusing to sign any legislation that isn't passed with bipartisan support. How realistic is that standard in today's, you know, really hyper, you know, polarized climate?
Well, look what happens now. We lurch from one party control to one party control, and once they get control, they don't want to work together. They don't want to build consensus. You know, we this country is almost 50-50 divided, and yet when they go down to Washington or up to Lansing, it's winner take all. They're not recognizing the fact that this is a split nation in terms of its politics. They want their whole agenda passed. Regardless, and then when the next party comes in and takes control, they undo it all and start over. So, you know, there's no consistency in our policy making, and that's one reason the schools in Michigan are in such a mess, because every 4 years or 8 years we're trying something different. We never stick to anything.
So you say the two-party system isn't serving us. What can be done logistically for real to change it?
Well, I think if we had a lot more independent candidates, the parties would have to do some more compromising, more consistency building to get a majority of the votes. I mean, we could try a lot of different things. I recommend in that column, I'd love to see a day when you looked at the ballot and there are no party designations. A candidate could run with support of a political party, but once his or her name got on the ballot, you would have to run and convince voters on the strength of your own merits. So people wouldn't know, really, unless they did their homework, whether they were voting for a Republican or a Democrat. Voters would have to work a lot harder, too. I just think we've got to take back control of our political system from the Republicans and the Democrats.
Nolan Finley, editor of the Detroit News editorial page, always great to have you on, and thanks for the op-ed and giving us some insight on what you were thinking. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Bob. Appreciate you.
Some bold statements from Nolan about getting ready both, but you know, with the mayor running for governor as an independent, you know, and if that takes traction, you know, Michigan might be the state that starts something like that, you know?
Yeah, very sure. Well could.
Coming up, the Gaza ceasefire deal. The president is speaking to the Israeli parliament right now. We'll get more from what he is saying and a lot more on this deal coming up next on JR Morning.
Today, the skies are calm, the guns are silent, the sirens are still, and the sun rises on a holy land that is finally at peace, a land and a region that will live, God willing, in peace for all eternity.
That's Donald Trump, and pardon some of the things that he has been talking about this morning, as now 20 living hostages have been released from the grip of Hamas and are now back in the state of Israel. So that's great news. And this wider peace deal is one that I think the region is taking to.
Yeah, well, the good news is these souls are back in Israel, and they've started the release of Palestinian prisoners, some mm-hmm. who were serving life sentences. Mm-hmm. So that has begun. The summit later on will get into what now? Has Hamas agreed to disarm fully? What will happen to the Gaza Strip? Are these people getting aid today, tomorrow, this week? So those are the questions they'll talk about.
And there's a summit that will happen after the president finishes speaking. He's going to Egypt, mm-hmm. and several other countries are going to be there. Leaders of these countries are going to be there as well. Bibi was invited. He said he told the president he was going to go, but then because of a Jewish holiday, he said he's not going to go. I know Iran was also invited. Iran has not said whether they would be there at that summit or not, but that would be huge if they showed up. So it's a big deal, and I think this has gone farther than, of course, any other president has had it go, and it's a good thing right now. We'll see what happens down the line.
You know, you bring up a good point, Jamie. The state in which Gaza lies, right? It's battered. It's broken. It is.
Can the hospitals function?
Right. I mean, large swaths of that country that are completely.
Oh, it's 90%
torn apart.
Gone.
So you still have. I mean, there's still an issue there, right? Yes, the offensive has stopped, mm-hmm. but that doesn't mean there. You don't just go back to what life was.
It's ruins. There.
Right. So like you're still talking about major infrastructure issues. You know, the hospitals, they're not functional.
No.
They're not going to be functional in a week. Schools
are
in
rubble. Right. So, like, what is the future there is a big question that they're going to try and figure out. And hopefully this holds.
Well, that's part of the plan is everybody's got a stake in the rebuild here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it needs to be done fairly quickly. As quick as you can.
As quick as possible.
Yeah.
We were watching the president's speech, and it was on mute because we have, you know, this radio show we're doing. And there was some disturbance, and we weren't sure what happened there. Now I'm starting to read some things where it was two left-wing lawmakers within the Knesset who were just holding up signs that said, "Recognize Palestine." And then security quickly surrounded them and removed them from the parliament's main chamber. The remaining lawmakers applauded to distract from this incident. They go back to Trump at the podium, and he goes, "Well, that was very efficient."
Yeah.
And then he keeps going. So that's what that was.
Oh, okay.
So, okay. So you just some lawmakers that were voicing their opinions. Okay, mm-hmm. fine. This is, presidents have tried this, right? There's been these two-state solutions.
Oh,
there's been all of these efforts to try to bring some stability to the region. And by stability, I mean, many of these countries, many of these kind of smaller cells of ideology is that they want Israel gone. They don't want Israel to be there. They don't want Israel to exist.
Right.
And so that's harder to fight, right? That's an ideology. That's a mentality. That's not physical, tangible things that you can go after or that you can attack or that there can be military plans on. It's different. And so you hope that with time, things have changed a little bit. And it feels like, based on the buy-in from all of these other countries in
that's
the region,
that's the big deal right
that,
there.
That it feels like that there's at least this idea of, well, it is what it is. Israel's here, and we should probably just go about our business. It's probably more beneficial for us to just exist together.
Yeah.
So I'm at least very encouraged with what we've seen so far.
Right. So far, it's just like, how fragile is this? Will the countries who put pressure on Hamas, will they continue to put pressure on and like you said, have a stake here and want to see this move forward? Will there be some sort of, if not a Palestinian state, just some sort of solution where they feel they are independent? I don't know.
Well, that's the difficult thing is because pre-October 7th, 2 years ago, there actually was a lot of commerce between the Strip and Israel. Like that you had people
they
working
work
in Israel,
working
in Gaza. Like there was, it was one of the more symbiotic points in the timeline than there had been for a very long time. So it felt like it was in a pretty okay space. And then obviously things took a wild turn the other direction.
And I think because of where we are right now, and I think there's just people in the region who want to see this success and want to see this succeed. And I just don't think they want to go back. I think they want to go forward. And if that means, you know, living side by side, I think at least people are going to be willing to talk more about it and be a little bit more serious because of what's going on right now to me.
I remember in the months after October 7th, I spoke with Professor Saeed Khan at Wayne State.
Sure.
And he said, you know, at wartime, and the other side, it was very similar for what Israel was going through. But at wartime, your population generally rallies around the leadership, right? And we saw it here in 2001.
Oh, 9/11, yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. I mean, George Bush had an approval rating of 97%.
Yes.
It was unheard of. It was unthinkable. No president ever had that kind of number. But it was, it was a scary time, and he was saying all the right things at that moment.
Yeah.
And he threw a strike at Yankee Stadium, and people rallied, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that was what we were seeing in Gaza, is people are like, these bombs are flying. People are attacking us. Well, we're rallying around the people that's our government, that are trying to push back. But what we saw over time was that relationship that the people of Gaza had built up deteriorated. And we're starting to see them push away Hamas, this ideology for, we want peace. We want to just be left alone. We can't take any more of this.
Yeah, I mean, that's got to be some people. You can't speak for everyone on either side.
Because
there are factions of people who believe,
certainly,
you know, certain things. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure a lot of people just want the bombing to stop. It seems like that has stopped. It's just, now what?
I feel relieved just for myself watching everything that's gone on. It's horrific.
Sure.
But for people that have family in this area, for people that have family in Gaza, for people that have, you know, that are related to somebody or know somebody that was a hostage or whatever, like, I'm relieved for them. I have a great weight lifted off my shoulders for those people that have to feel some sort of solace in the fact that things have stopped, things have cooled down, and now we can work through whatever issues going forward on the basis of, let's not attack each other.
Mm-hmm. I would love to hear from our politicians who have been pretty quiet.
Oh, hold on. We have somebody on the line. Oh, no, we don't.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they don't want to talk about this. Rashida's got nothing to say on this.
Wow.
I mean, the drumbeat for a ceasefire from a lot of the politicians was loud,
yes,
and constant. And now it's like, okay, now there's a ceasefire. What are your thoughts?
I mean, you had the Marjorie Taylor Greene was saying this needs to stop.
Right.
I mean, she came out and said that there's a, you know, this is a genocide.
Has done, yeah. She has done like a 180.
It's pretty. We should do a deep dive into Marjorie Taylor Greene.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's pretty unbelievable with where she's at. But good day.
Good day on that front.
Mm-hmm. What happens next, we'll see. But right now, this is being built on some pretty sturdy foundation. All right, we'll take a break. Rough weekend in sports here in our area. We feel it. We know you feel it. We'll talk about it next on JR Morning.
You know, we were able to do some things good in phases at times, but not enough for a team like that, you know, with the pedigree they have, the way they play back at their house. We could not compliment each other. And we weren't able to really make it a game. We really weren't. So that's really the story of the game.
Dan Campbell there talking about the loss to the Kansas City Chiefs. Let's bring in Steve Courtney, our sports analyst here at WJR, to talk about not only the Lions, but the Tigers, Michigan State. Tough weekend.
Oh, Jamie, good morning to you and the group. And hello again, everyone. Yeah, it was not good. All the way around, but what folks are going to be talking about as it applies to our now 4-2 Lions following the loss of the Chiefs last night is what transpired afterwards. Kind of a redo of the Muhammad Ali Sonny Liston bout years ago with
Lloyd's shaking his head.
Yeah, yep.
You know, I just don't get it. All right, you lose 30-17, and Brian Branch decides to go up and swipe at Juju Smith-Schuster. So that starts somewhat of a brawl. Brawls in the NFL are, you know, whatever. But the problem is, and Dan Campbell alluded to it afterwards, just unacceptable. You take your medicine, you get on the plane, and you go home. And obviously, the league is going to look at this, and you're already looking at a depleted Lions secondary due to injury. So what the league is going to decide, who knows? But we do know this. The Lions will host a very good Tampa Bay Buccaneer team coming up on Monday night. So rather unfortunate. Again, the Lions fall 30-17 last night. Now, on the college front, not much better. Not much better at all. Homecoming on the banks of the Red Cedar Saturday. Very exciting. And then there was the result. Jalen Berger. Spartan fans remember that name, scored three times, and Nico Iamaleva threw for 180 yards, three scores. UCLA comes in to East Lansing, beat the Spartans 38-13. Remember, Berger, he transferred to UCLA from Michigan State following the 2023 season, ran for 83 yards on 13 carries, also had three receptions for 24 yards. And many looking at this defeat as probably the low point of Jonathan Smith's 18-game tenure as the head football coach in East Lansing. Now, the Spartans pretty much outplayed in every aspect of the game. They allowed a fake punt, fumbled the ball twice, failed to convert on fourth down four times, and defensively, they allowed 418 yards, again, to UCLA. And it does not, and I'm stressing not, get any easier for Jonathan Smith and the Spartans. They will go to where? Indiana on Saturday. That's going to be a 3:30 kick. You know what's going on with the Hoosiers, don't you? They were just elevated to number 3 in the country. They're 6-0 overall, 3-0 in Big Ten play. They're coming off that stellar 30-20 win at number 3 Oregon. And for the record, they've been installed as 26.5-point favorites over the green and white on Saturday. Meanwhile, if you're a Michigan fan, the results.
Oh, you can stop there, Steve. That's okay. We'll talk to you later.
You know what, Chris? I feel horrible. I mean, it's just one of those Mondays where anything that could have gone wrong over the weekend, it went wrong. But I'll just I'll soften the blow here. Freshman walk-on King Miller ran for 158 yards and a touchdown. Jaden Maeva threw for 265. Okay, Michigan falls 31-13. Up next for them will be hosting the Washington Huskies. They're 5-1, 2-1 in conference play. That's going to be 12 noon at the Big House. I got to mention this, too. This conversation brought to you by the Performance Remodeling Sweepstakes, the $100,000 window of opportunity sweepstakes. As a matter of fact, call 586-540-6000 or visit windowsroofingsiding.com for more details. The Performance Remodeling $100,000 window of opportunity sweepstakes. Now, you guys want to talk Tigers? Or
how late did you stay up? I made it to the 12th.
I stayed up for the whole thing, and
God bless you, man.
I was thinking about going to bed around the 12th as well, and then it dawns on me, what an idiot! You've stayed up this long, why go to sleep now? And I had my
Michigan
State
duties.
Well, you
didn't have a toddler waking up early. I had
that
element.
That's true enough. Yeah, but I will tell you this: when I saw Tommy Canley warming up in the 13th. I said, if he gets in, it's over.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the way it went. But listen, what an epic, epic baseball game. You're talking about 4 hours, 58 minutes. Both teams had really, really good chances. And, of course, we know Jorge Polanco was the decisive blow in the 15th. And interesting enough, Seattle goes into Toronto last night and get themselves a 3-1 win in game one of the ALCS. So, you know, there's that.
Well, the Red Wings won a game. We got that going for us.
You know what? Round of applause.
Although they lost their first game of the year, and Todd McClellan was not happy about that.
Look, 1-1.
Yeah, well, we're on a ride.
Last week, I think it was Wednesday, we had Coach McClellan on the album show, and you know, what a difference it makes. We talked to him about the fact he took the job the day after Christmas a year ago. This time around, had a full off season through camp. He thought it was, a wonderful thing. And then they come out and they lay an egg in the opener against Les Habitants du Montréal and then get themselves a nice win over the Maple Leafs. So, you know, hopefully the Red Wings can get it together and snap the 9-year postseason
playoff drought. Here's to hoping. Steve, thanks for bringing us all the bad news. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Steve.
Boy, I'll tell you what, I really turned out to be a Debbie Downer this morning. I apologize.
Go back to bed.
I'm going to.
Okay. All right, thanks to Steve. Coming up, more on the historic peace deal in the Middle East at 8:05.
O'clock hour. Good to have you. We still have an opportunity for you to win $1,000 coming up in just a couple of minutes. So make sure you're listening. Also, we've got tickets when Detroit hosts New York Sunday, November 23rd at Ford Field. We've got transportation for you, courtesy of Metro Cars, Buddy's Pizza trip for you. So we'll give you an opportunity to win that trip as well. Getting a line, you know, getting tickets to a football game is difficult.
Oh,
it's expensive.
Yeah.
So we'll make sure that we got you covered. Meanwhile, the big news this morning, we'll get to our teams. But the big news this morning is that Hamas has released these hostages that they have.
Mm-hmm.
20 have been released.
Yes. That are alive.
That are alive.
Yes.
And
there's an issue here with the dead hostages not fully returned.
Correct. So the hostages that are alive are now back in Israel, mm-hmm. as we understand it.
Right.
That's according to what Donald Trump said as he's addressing the Israeli parliament.
20 courageous hostages are returning to the glorious embrace of their families, and it is glorious. 28 more precious loved ones are coming home at last to rest in this sacred soil.
So that's the good news,
mm-hmm.
is that these hostages are back. Now, Donald Trump's addressing the Israeli parliament right now. And this is the foundation of what will be hopefully a long lasting peace, not just a quick ceasefire, not just something that's going to last for a couple years, something wide ranging, long lasting. And the hope here is that it brings stability to the region that we have not seen before.
Mm-hmm.
That's the hope. What will actually play out in practicality, we'll see. That's for time to tell. But for right now, this is great news. This is a major, major foreign policy win for Donald Trump. and the team that he put in place to work on this deal, and the countries that were involved as mediators, Egypt, Qatar, the UAE, mm-hmm. all of these countries that had a stake in this.
Obviously, Netanyahu, a major player here, he says he's ready for peace.
Mr. President, you are committed to this peace. I am committed to this peace. And together, Mr. President, we will achieve this peace. And together, Mr. President, we will achieve this peace. We've done it before. We've done it before in the Abraham Accords, and we'll do it again.
So he's saying he's ready for lasting peace. President Trump, when he was talking, said Netanyahu, not the easiest guy.
Yeah,
his riffing that he does.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
But that's what makes him great. So it seems like those two have a good relationship and got to this point. There's the summit coming up in Egypt where a lot of countries are going to be here. Netanyahu not, though, however, because of the religious holiday, he says.
Yeah, and, you know, according to the president, when they ask him on his way over to Israel, was the war over? He says in his mind, it's
over.
It's over. But, you know, we still have a lot more. The second phase, this meeting that's going to go on in Egypt. I mean, it's a who's who when you look at the list of people who have confirmed, you know, the French president, Turkish president, mm-hmm. Spanish prime minister, Italian prime minister, Jordan's King Abdullah. I mean, you know, Pakistan, Canada's prime minister, Norway. Now I see Iraq's prime minister is on here as well. Mohammed Shia al-Sudani
mm-hmm.
is on the list as attending.
So it tells you that there is at least an appetite for this.
Mm-hmm.
It tells you that there is a desire in the region to stop this, to stop the killings. I mean, just stop it. Stop it. And I maybe we've gotten to the point where, you know, Donald Trump has led the way of this idea that, you know, you're not just going to be able to push Israel around because the United States is behind Israel.
Yeah.
They're not going anywhere. So how do we live symbiotically in this world? How do we do that? Well, part of that is getting everybody on board. And so far, that's at least what we've seen in the very early stages of this. But we don't know what exactly Hamas is going to agree to. We don't know if they're going to lay down their arms. We don't know if they're going to just, you know,
fade away into
the shadows. Yeah. We don't know what they're going to do yet. So that's a major looming question.
We have more sound, I believe, from the president at the Knesset.
This is the end of an age of terror and death and the beginning of the age of faith and hope and of God. It's the start of a grand concord and lasting harmony for Israel and all the nations of what will soon be a truly magnificent region. I believe that so strongly. This is the historic dawn of a new Middle East.
Sweeping terms from the president, and everyone hopes that this holds. I wonder how much pressure he's putting on himself now moving forward, because what happens next is a big question.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think when you're negotiating this type of deal, there probably is that pressure. Like, that probably doesn't go away. Because you're dealing with these external circumstances that you don't really have control over.
Mm-hmm.
Right? The United States doesn't have control over Israel. The United States certainly doesn't have control over Hamas. They're a terrorist group in the eyes of the United States.
Right.
So it's a lot of hoping. It's a lot of working with these partners in the region, which they've done so far. And he talked about the help in crafting this deal.
Let me also convey my tremendous appreciation for all of the nations of the Arab and Muslim world that came together to press Hamas to set the hostages free and to send them home. We had a lot of help. We had a lot of help from a lot of people that you wouldn't suspect.
There are analysts who say that's not Trump's MO to sort of thank a lot of other nations.
Right.
But clearly there was support here from those nations to force Hamas to this point.
Well, I don't know that he can totally take. I mean, he
led
the
charge.
No doubt about it.
Yeah.
I mean, make no mistake about it.
Absolutely.
Donald Trump is the driving force here.
Mm-hmm.
OK, but you don't get to this point unless you get these other countries involved.
Right.
And I think that that's where this is a little different compared to some of these deals that we've seen in the past,
mm-hmm.
where it's been a two-state solution. It's been, you know, Israel and somebody
that's
else.
It. Yeah.
Israel, but this is Israel and everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's involved. So I think it's a great day. Today is a great day.
This is further than we've ever been.
Yeah, it's a great day. So we'll see where this progresses. I feel relief for the people of our community that, you know, have loved ones in these areas or have people fighting in this war, that they get a little bit of relief.
Yeah.
They get a respite from this. And now you got to rebuild Gaza. Now you gotta,
that's the big deal. And now it's 90% gone. So
now you got to make sure that these people are getting medical, are getting food, are getting water, are getting, you know, all the necessary aid that they need for their survival as these rebuild efforts continue. Speaking of rebuilds, Tigers are probably on the way to one. They need to.
What are we talking about? Tigers, Red Wings. Rebuild do you want to talk about?
Let's focus on the Tigers.
All right,
because they're gonna have to make some decisions this offseason. And they lose in 15 innings. Season's over. It was a wild game. Really, an unbelievable. It was a great baseball game
for a win or go home game. I mean,
it was
kind of
high
what
stakes.
Yeah.
I have no nails left after watching the end of that.
You got
game.
Fingerprints?
Yeah. Exactly. So they lose, they're done, and now a lot of decisions for Scott Harris this offseason.
Again, leaving a lot of runners in scoring position. They had their chances. They could not hit the ball again. You got to get some bats.
Lions lose yesterday as well.
Yeah, and we're going to talk about that with Lomas Brown coming up at 8:35 inside the huddle. What happened in Kansas City?
That's the question. What happened here?
Yeah.
What happened in that 60 minutes, and what happened outside of the 60 minutes? Yeah, the fight, it was unbelievable scene afterwards. So we'll talk about that coming up as well. Meanwhile, on the other side, Donald Trump and this Insurrection Act. What could that mean for cities in our country? We'll talk about it in a JR Morning.
Summer storms are unpredictable. Fall storms can be as well. You have to be prepared. You have to avoid, you know, some floods that can happen in this fall time. Shelby Mechanical is here to help you save big. Get $150 off their amazing sewer lining system, $50 off sump pump installation. That can give you peace of mind anytime a storm hits, and $25 off faucet repair, which is an easy upgrade to any kitchen or bath. Don't wait for small issues to turn into big problems. Get fast, reliable service from a plumber you can trust, and that's Shelby Mechanical. Schedule today at shelbymechanical.net. That's shelbymechanical.net. For projects big and small, you know who to call. Shelby Mechanical for all your plumbing needs.
Welcome back to JR Morning. Vice President J.D. Vance says President Trump is looking at all his options as he considers invoking the Insurrection Act, a move that would allow a president to deploy the U.S. military on American soil for law enforcement purposes. The idea has sparked some intense legal and constitutional debate over how far presidential power can go. And joining us now to break down what the Insurrection Act really allows and what its limits are is University of Michigan law professor Richard Friedman. Professor, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I am well. First of all, let's just, before we get into it deeply, what exactly is the Insurrection Act, and under what circumstance can a president legally use it?
Yeah, so the Insurrection Act, it's a very old statute going back to the early years of the 19th century. And it allows the president, when he thinks that there's an insurrection or or federal law is being threatened, to use the U.S. military on American soil, notwithstanding the usual prohibition against using the military for matters such as law enforcement. So it can be invoked by the president. It has been many times, not in over 30 years. I don't think it's been invoked in situations like this.
So what kinds of conditions, though, would have to exist before a step like that could be considered justified under the law?
Yeah. Well, if a state is in open rebellion, that certainly would justify it. If federal law just can't be enforced without using the military, that would. Or if the state itself requests it, which has happened. For instance, after the Rodney King verdict, you remember there was rioting in Los Angeles, and the governor and the mayor both asked for federal troop involvement. During the early 1960s and the 50s, some of the southern states were resisting civil rights orders by the federal courts. Then the president sometimes invoked the Insurrection Act without the request over the objections of the governors.
Yeah, about seven times, I think, they've used this power to desegregate the schools during the march, MLK's yeah. march, Detroit uprising, the riots in L.A., such like that. But people are saying that we're not at that state of those other seven times this has been used.
I think that's right. I mean, I think that what's happening in Portland and in Chicago is, you know, it's relatively small protests against ICE mainly. There has been some violence, but, you know, there's some violence in our cities all the time. It does not appear, and it's not as if the states are condoning the violence. Ordinary police are very actively involved, and they are cooperating with the federal enforcement officers. Mainly the Federal Protection Service, because there are non-military federal officers who are there to protect officials such as ICE. So this is not something that's out of control. The head of the FPS in Portland said he's got no morale problem. You know, they communicate with the Portland police. It's not a situation running out of control. I think the administration is eager to send federal troops in there. It was eager, certainly, to nationalize the National Guard. But to my mind, it's a manufactured situation.
Well, you had Vice President J.D. Vance telling Kristen Welker on Meet the Press yesterday, and he was asked whether or not that he was seriously considering invoking the Insurrection Act. And the vice president said right now he hasn't felt the need to. And this comes as these troops have been deployed in places like Oregon and Illinois, but court orders have blocked them from actually enforcing some of the laws that they were sent to do. So what comes next? Like, what would be the next logical step here?
Well, we'll see. The Insurrection Act would be a big step because that would be the actual federal troops, the regular U.S. Army. So I think it's really a matter of the frustration level of the president. He wants to do something, and if in the end he's not allowed to in these cities because of court orders, and we'll see. They're working their way up the Ninth Circuit has stepped in with respect to Oregon. The administration has appealed to the Seventh Circuit, that is the Courts of Appeals, with respect to Illinois. Maybe these are going to go all the way up to the Supreme Court. If in the end he's really not allowed to use the National Guard, he may say, let's
something else. I think it depends on how eager he is really to get troops on the ground in our cities. And you can ask, you know, what is it for? It looks to me like it's largely, as many things with this president, performative. In other words, it's to make a show, you know, to make a point, because the contention is that our cities are out of control, even though the data suggests crime is down. It could be, as Governor Pritzker suggests, an attempt to have troops there at the time of the midterm elections. I don't know. I have not found prediction to be an easy thing for the last several months.
Speaking with Richard Friedman, law professor at University of Michigan. And professor, you know, once they're deployed domestically, really the Constitution doesn't limit how long federal troops can remain. So could this open the door for maybe an extended or even indefinite military presence in our cities?
Well, that of course is a concern. And the administration is contending that his decision is utterly unreviewable, that the courts have no role in it. I don't think the courts are going to take that view. I think what they're going to say is, in the end, that the courts do have a role, but they've got to be quite deferential to the president. And the question is whether the bounds of that deference are exceeded here. But sure, there's a danger that this is going to be, if not a constant thing, a very regular routine thing. And it never has been before.
Richard Friedman, law professor at the University of Michigan, always appreciate your insight. Thanks for coming on JR Morning.
Thanks so much.
Coming up, we've talked about all the other teams that Michigan teams that did not do well. Let's talk about those Lions. Lomas Brown was there. He's going to tell us what happened next at 8:35.
I love Brian Branch, but what he did is inexcusable, and it's not going to be accepted here. It's not what we do. It's not what we're about. I apologize to Coach Reed and the Chiefs and you know, and Schuster. That's not okay. That's not what we do here, and it's not going to be okay. He knows it. Our team knows it, and so that's not what we do.
That is Dan Campbell post game after the loss to the Chiefs, saying that the little melee that Brian Branch started is not okay. We're going to go inside the huddle, see what Lomas Brown thinks of all this. Inside the huddle, sponsored by CNC Heating and Air Conditioning. Call 800-MY-FURNACE or visit cncheat.com. Lomas, you heard that bite. You watched it with your own two eyes. What did you think about how this game ended?
Yeah, just very unfortunate, Jamie, that the game had to end that way. I know the score wasn't the way we wanted the score or the game to end, but you know, it's just it's tough because you let down the whole team, you know, and it's really a selfish act as an individual, especially when you know, part of a team like he is, and you could just hear it in Coach's voice. It was just kind of like that wet blanket. Other than, you know, losing the game, it was another wet blanket that was sort of thrown over the team. And like I say, man, I know, like I said, because Coach was upset, I know the team is probably going to do something. And the thing about it is, because Brian is a repeat offender, you know, the league may look into it now. So we'll just have to wait and see how things fall out.
And Lo, and I know – you know, you get frustrated, you lose, you get frustrated, but, you know, to strike out like that. And as you say, you hurt the whole team. So now, you know, it's going to be fine. It's going to be probably a suspension, which hurts the team. And they're going in next week against, you know, I call him Baker the Playmaker over in Tampa. Well, here against Tampa Bay.
Yeah. I mean, you know, this guy, Baker Mayfield, has been playing, is playing at an MVP level. And you're right. We were already shorthanded going into that game. And for us to possibly not only lose Brian, but you just don't know how Kirby Joseph is going to be.
Right.
He kept dealing with that knee all game long. And we know what the situation at the cornerback position. And we need all hands on deck. And for Brian to do that, it's just it's not a good look. It really isn't.
All right. So now where do they go from here? Because – you know, obviously the league is going to do whatever they're going to do. We'll have to see what that looks like. But now moving forward, you know, they didn't look great last night. They had moments, you know, that touchdown that was called back on that first drive, which was really a masterclass. But now things look a little different coming out of this game.
Yeah, they do. And, you know, anytime they lose the game, we're going to always look sure. at it and break it down and be critical of the loss. I have a tendency of looking at it the other way. I'm telling you, man, and I said it before the game, Patrick Mahomes, that's a different cat there, man.
Yeah.
That's a different dude there. That team is – I don't know if they're all the way back, but they're kind of back to the team that we know them to be. And like I said, they use that game as a measuring stick for where they are. Because we got a heck of a team. So, you know, what we've always said, and Dan Campbell and those guys that preach is next man up. Well, they're going to have to find some men probably off the street. But it's going to have to be that next man up mentality now. And we're just going to have to deal with it. Hopefully we could just start trying to get healthy instead of you know, getting unhealthy. But, it's going to be tough. It's going to be tough, and nobody's going to feel sorry for us either.
So what did you say on that play where Jared Goff drew the penalty and then negated the touchdown? There was this pull report where they asked the referee, like, what happened here, and it looks like he didn't pause long enough in the quarterback position.
Yeah, so when I initially seen it and called in on radio, my thing was because Jared, it was just kind of like a last-minute shift. Jared got out there, and it was a shift that kind of got that where he surprised the defense by going out there. But it was such a late shift getting out there, and he didn't. You know, again, you were supposed to establish yourself, you know, for that 1 second mm-hmm. before. And he couldn't have did that because, like I say, the shift was so late. By the time he got out there, basically we were snapping the ball.
Oh, yeah.
So we really didn't understand it up first because at first they said the legal motion, then we might have heard the legal shift. So we were a little confused in the box about what happened. But the referees, they made that decision that came from New York. It wasn't even the refs there. It was a decision that was made from New York, and, of course, it went against us.
On the defense, Lowe, you know, we couldn't get that big stop, you know, late in the game. What do you think broke down on that side of the ball? Was it execution? Were they tired, or is it just Mahomes being Mahomes?
But think about this, too, Lloyd. Think about what we did to keep them in the game, man. Aiden Hutchinson with that 15-yard roughing, right?
Yeah.
That kept a drive going and stuff where we could have got them off the field, got us a little momentum. It was another big play penalty that we had. I'm just not thinking of it right now mm-hmm. in the game that kind of hurt us and everything. I don't know if the defense was necessarily tired. But, again, like you said, when plays needed to be made, they made the plays, and we weren't able to make those plays. And we are so used to watching our team make plays like that, either offensively or defensively, to keep the momentum on our side. But I do know we had a couple of big penalties that kept plays going for them. And you going up against, like I say, that dude – and Patrick Mahomes, you can't give him multiple opportunities, and that's what we did.
I almost feel like we saw the reverse of what we've been seeing the last few weeks, which was that offensive line just gets better and better throughout the game. It felt like they got a little gas towards the end, Lowe.
Well, I know the thing about it that at first, like you said, Chris, they were playing very well, I thought, giving Jared time, doing what they had to do, especially in the first half. Mm-hmm. Think about this. We had 19 carries, like 90-something yards
right.
in the first half of the game. Came back in the second half. We only had four carries. Again, you know, even if you're trying to keep their offense on the sideline, you try to run the ball to eat up the time to keep Patrick Mahomes and them on the sideline. But if you only run the ball four times, and we weren't down, I mean, we went into halftime, I think, 13-10? So it wasn't like we were out of reach or the game was out of reach. So, you know, again, we got away from some of the philosophy of what we normally do, and it came back to haunt us in the end.
It sure did. That is not what we wanted. Technically second in the division now, so we have some work to do against the Buccaneers coming up on Monday night. Lowe, thank you so much.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.
One, you know, home stretch here of JR Morning. We're going to talk Monday munchies. It's hard to say
That's
on a Monday. That's next.
So China came out and they have added new port fees on U.S. ships. There was an antitrust investigation into Qualcomm, and they've unveiled sweeping new curbs on exports of rare earth and critical minerals. That then prompted President Donald Trump on Friday to announce an additional 100% tariffs on China, as well as export controls on any and all critical software. China now firing back, saying that they will respond in turn to these higher tariffs if further negotiations are not had. What are the economic ramifications of this? Adam Kobiesi is the founder of the Kobiesi Letter and joins us this morning. Adam, it's good to have you back.
Thanks for having me.
All
great
right,
to be here.
What's the fallout for this? What do we expect to happen?
So, you know, our view on Friday when this kind of all unfolded was that, you know, this was part of President Trump's playbook that we've kind of seen many times now over the last 10 months where he exerts a lot of pressure from the start, threatens these very big tariffs, but then he starts to pull back and try to reach some sort of trade agreement. And we're already starting to see that this weekend. China clarified that this was not a full ban on rare earth metals, but just, you know, like a new restriction that they're imposing with some approvals, with many approvals still set to be granted. So it looks like in this case, even it might have been a misunderstanding almost between China and the U.S. And Trump took to Truth Social and tweeted about it or posted about it, which resulted in this rapid downswing in just about all asset classes, from stocks to commodities to crypto and everything in between.
And the president also said that, well, I may cancel an upcoming meeting with Xi Jinping, and that could lead to, you know, a spiral in the economy. Do you expect that to happen?
So, yeah, so he actually said that in his initial post. And then after the market closed on Friday, he said, you know, oh, I haven't canceled my meeting yet. It may still happen. So that was, again, like part of our view that the initial post that kind of sent things lower was more of a threat or bargaining chip that he was looking to deploy. But we don't really see this as something that's going to result in a prolonged crash in the market.
Adam Kobiesi, always good to catch up with you. Thank you for your time this morning. We'll talk again very soon. We'll keep an eye on this.
Thank you. Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, you got it. Meanwhile, I want to give you an opportunity to win $1,000. Texas Hours national keyword free to 95819. That's F-R-E-E to 95819. We'll text you back to confirm your entry. Data and messaging rates may apply. Please don't text and drive. You can play five times each weekday for five chances to win. It's $5,000 a day on 760 WJR. Official rules and more info are at WJR.com. Also, WJR's Game Day in the D, your chance to roar when Detroit hosts New York Sunday, November 23rd at Ford Field. You can win tickets, transportation courtesy of MetroCars, and $100 to dine at Buddy's. All you got to do to enter this, download the free WJR mobile app, find the secret keyword, and then text it to 800-859-0957. Again, more information is at WJR.com.
And it's Monday, and that means it's Monday Munchies here on our JR Morning program. And today we're highlighting Smoothie King. They have some new expansive items here for fall. And you know I'm on my health kick, so this is like right up my alley.
You're in your health era?
well, for now. Yeah. Let's bring in Virginia Kay, marketing manager for Smoothie King, and a pal of mine, Braylon Edwards, of course, Michigan legend, to talk about a cool program. Good morning to you both.
Good morning.
Braylon?
Good morning, Jamie.
Hey there.
First of all, you're always in your era of health.
That's right, Braylon. Tell her.
Tell you what.
Good morning, everybody. Good morning.
That was the right thing to say, Braylon. Virginia, let's start with you. What are some new things we could get at Smoothie King that we could all be in our health era?
Absolutely. Right now, we are definitely talking Power Eats. It's delicious and flavorful options that are going to help you fuel your day. So we're known for our amazingly delicious organic smoothies, but what we've added to the menu are our loaded toasts. This is a way to add an extra 9 to 13 grams of protein to your daily routine. So you're taking an 8-grain bread and you're using an all-natural peanut butter with things from strawberries and blueberries and granola toppings to an avocado spread.
Yeah.
We're also doing egg and cheese protein boxes and peanut butter protein boxes. And this is going to deliver you anywhere from an extra 21 grams of protein to 26 grams of protein to your normal health routine, including smoothies and our smoothie bowls.
Virginia, these options seems like they're clearly geared toward convenience. And do you see these items as a bid to kind of capture more of that breakfast or lunch market, or are they specifically positioned as, you know, after the workout and maybe just a snack for the midday?
No, I don't know if it's you or I know myself. I love that extra crunch when it comes to my protein. So I love adding it to my morning routine.
Uh-huh.
But what we're seeing is a drive in for people for that lunch or that midday between lunch and dinner, where you're looking to eat something, maybe grab that smoothie to have that extra burst of protein, a little bit of that fruit during your day that might just tide you over between the two meals.
And Braylon, we love high school football here on WJR, and you do too. There's a new partnership with Smoothie King. What are you doing?
So the Lee Foundation, as well as Smoothie King, has partnered up with myself and Woodward Sports, and what we're doing is we're highlighting an athlete a week for the next 12 weeks, and we've already done it two, so it's 10 weeks left. Basically, we wanted to highlight these athletes and work into what we're doing as it relates to the healthy ingredients, the Smoothie King. Jumping in real quick, I'm more of a – I feel like this, the lunch crowd, why it's taken over is because in the morning, you already have your – whatever you're going to eat, whatever you're going to make, it's right there, it's accessible, it's in the refrigerator. But when you get into that, I'm out the house, right. 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock, yeah. I want to do something healthy, but I don't want to, you know, I don't want to mess up the program. Now Smoothie King and all the healthy ingredients, all the real fruit, they allow you a convenient option, you know, in a lunchtime rush, if you will. So that's kind of where I am at with that.
Cool.
But the partner with the high school in that situation has been great. Just the kids, highlighting them, showing them that people support them, people care. You know, you see the impact that it has. Last week we had our first female athlete who's a freshman,
nice.
Kate Berghoff from Mercy High School, volleyball player. So cool. Just a lot of fun highlighting high school and getting back into, you know, where it started for me.
Yeah.
Cool. Well,
which was the MHSAA.
Right. You know what? I wish we had more time. We're at the end of the show. I want to ask you about Michigan football. Maybe we'll have you back, Braylon.
Yeah, you might need me for two shows.
I feel Braylon on that.
All right.
Thank you to you both, Virginia K. Braylon Edwards. Go get a smoothie today on Monday Munchies. Thank you.
100%.
Thank you.
Cool. Good stuff.
Yeah.
I'm going to be gone for a couple of days, guys.
I know, man.
Joining some of our listeners out in Italy, the Amalfi Coast.
Arrivederci.
So, yeah, exactly.
Jamie
exactly.
Will keep me, you know,
yeah.
intact.
Yes, yeah. Please. Somebody's got to keep Lloyd in check. All right, we'll see you tomorrow. Same time, same place. Have a good one.